Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Oh, baby, it's Friday. It's D-Day. It's Decision Day here in Washington, D.C. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 31st day of January 2020. And it's the day that the Senate should vote on whether or not they end this sham. Will it? Which way will it go? Who knows? I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for downloading, tuning in, telling a friend. All the reviews, when I said that Quinn was being badmouthed in the reviews, my two-year-old daughter was being badmouthed in the reviews on iTunes, you snapped to it, and you made me laugh, and you made me appreciate it, too. So thank you for all of that. And thanks for everybody who rates and reviews and downloads and subscribes and tells a friend. Telling a friend is the best, most effective way anybody can learn about this show. And it's likely the only way anybody will ever learn about this show. So thank you for that. You guys have a lot of friends. A lot of friends. And good for you. Man, so today's the day. Oh, by the way, you can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. It is the Friday interview edition, which means you only really have to suffer through me for half of a regular show. And then we talk to an expert who has a fan in Scotland. He gets fan mail sent to me from a listener in Scotland. I don't get fan mail from Scotland, but Brian does. Brian Darling spent many, many years working in the Senate. He's an expert on Senate rules and knows all these people and has insights into their thinking. So we talk to him in a bit. Next week, by the way, we are joined by Peter Hassan, who has a new book coming out about the tech giants screwing with conservatives. You're going to want to hear that, but that's next week. I'm just teasing you now. All right, so will they or won't they? Will there be witnesses or will this thing come to a merciful end? Will it be put out of our misery? Well, it's morning now on Friday. By evening, early evening, the Senate will likely know which way, or we'll likely know which way the Senate's going to go. It's going to be interesting to see. I can't wait to figure it out. It'd be so good for the country if we just put this thing to bed. We have some audio from the trial. We have some coronavirus updates. We have senators calling for shutting down travel with China. We got a lot to cram into this half an hour. So let's start cramming, shall we? We start, of course, with a hat tip to our great sponsor, Life Change Tea. Life Change Tea. It will change your life. Go to getthetea.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. You get special discounts, really good discounts. But Life Change Tea, it's the tea that makes you go. That's not me saying it, although I can attest to it. It is them saying it. It is their slogan. And why do you need to go? And why do you need tea to go? Well, it's not just tea that makes you go. You say, I go every day. No, this helps you get all of the stuff out of you so that your digestive tract is clean. And that way, when you eat new food, your body can absorb more of the nutrients in that food. It's not being blocked. It's very important if you want energy, you want to feel some pep in your step, you want to get back to feeling like your old self. The stuff we eat today is deprived of nutrition. Some of it's being processed out of it. That's where Life Change Tea is so crucial. It helps you get all you can out of the food you eat. Go to Life Change. Go to GetTheTea.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. You get special discounts. You'll like it. You just drink a cup a day. Lord knows that's not too much. Don't overdo it. Use as directed. Okay, let's get into the news of the day and the Democrats desperately scrambling to try and get witnesses. They're really feeling the crunch time on both sides. They really want, Democrats really want the witnesses. The White House understandably, wants this done. They want it over with. Adam Schiff was down on the floor of the Senate last night, and they went from, we need witnesses, we need all these witnesses, who knows how long it could take, to Adam Schiff pulling a page out of the Kavanaugh playbook of, well, we could get all these witnesses done. Why don't we just say we have a week to get these witnesses done, huh? That would be good if you just give us a week to get these witnesses done. Remember they asked for, they wanted many, many more hearings before the, in the Kavanaugh hearing, and that wasn't going to happen. So then they cornered Jeff Flake and they said, Jeff Flake, come on, man, 1 week. What's wrong with 1 week? They never intended 1 week because they tried to delay it even longer after they got that week, but they just want that little bit. Just keep opening it up a little bit further, and then we can ask for more. Ask for some, get some, then ask for more. And then when it's done, ask for more. And then when it's done, ask for more. That's what they're trying to do. Schiff suggested a 1 week delay for depositions and limited time for witnesses, saying that the White House concerns that this would mean a possible endless trial are unfounded. They're not unfounded. They also want to empower the Chief Justice to rule on any disputes. He basically want to make John Roberts the god of the United States Senate, which ain't never going to happen. Senators are not going to cede power. They could, but they're not going to. Senators do not like outsiders having a say on what goes on over the Senate. They don't even like outsiders saying what should go on in the Senate. They're very, very particular about the Senate. They're very protective of the institution. So the odds of them willingly ceding power to John Roberts to decide which witnesses are okay and which evidence is okay and which privileges exerted by the president and are legal and legitimate seems absurd. Plus, judging by your emails, a lot of you think that John Roberts is a never-Trumper and he's never going to rule in favor of the president. There's that possibility. John Roberts certainly has been critical of the Obama administration in many times, but even giving him the benefit of the doubt that he could be a neutral arbiter calling balls and strikes, there's no way in the world senators will cede power to him. It's not how the Senate has ever worked, and it's not how the Senate would work now. So with that in mind, and the desperation seeping out of every pore, I want to play some clips from the trial yesterday, the question and answer session. Democrats were asked about, well, how was it if soliciting foreign interference or information from foreign sources is a high crime and misdemeanor. It's so awful. Ceding that, you know, they're not ceding that Donald Trump did that. But if it were so terrible, then should Hillary Clinton, had she won, been impeached for the Steele dossier? Of course, the Steele dossier had a double whammy on the foreign front. Christopher Steele is a British national, not an American citizen. And Christopher Steele went to Russian sources, Russian intelligence sources, to get the information he put in his little research, opposition research folder. Which, again, a foreign influence. Foreigners trying to interfere in our election. But these ones were hired and paid for by the Clinton team. Well, Hakeem Jeffries had an interesting take on this. It's hard to characterize. It's a bit of it's shocking and hilarious and sad all at the same time. Rather than try to explain it, let's just listen to Congressman Hakeem Jeffries explain why the Democrats soliciting foreign interference in the 2016 election is A-OK with Democrats.
The analogy is not applicable to the present situation because, first, to the extent that opposition research was obtained, it was opposition research that was purchased.
Did you catch that? It's not foreign interference. It's not the same as what Trump did because Hillary Clinton cut a check for it. The Clinton campaign paid for it. They went through intermediaries, a law firm called Perkins Coie, because they didn't want to have their fingerprints on it. Now, why wouldn't they want to have their fingerprints on it? It's simply opposition research. Nothing illegal about that. Nothing untoward, right? Yeah, oh, except for the fact that it came from the Russian intelligence agencies, Russian intelligence operatives, through a British spy. Yeah, no, nothing untoward there. Democrats had no problem with it. Now Donald Trump has a way out of this. All he has to do is cut a check to Ukraine. $100 ought to do it. Then Donald Trump was paying for foreign opposition, foreign interference in the election, not soliciting it for free or something. I don't know what in the hell kind of argument this is, but I guess when you don't have an argument, you gotta try anything. And you're trying to deal with the ridiculous. You just fling everything against the wall and hope something sticks. Hey, will that work? No. Well, how about this one? How about we just say it's different because Hillary paid for it? All right, yeah, let's do that. I can't believe they made that argument on national television. That clip is one that is making the rounds on social media, but curiously is not making the rounds on cable news. Oh, Fox might play it, but nobody else. It's an unbelievable admission. It's an unbelievable attempt to avoid the charge, the accurate charge of hypocrisy. On the other side, Jay Sekulow was asked, well, both sides were asked about witnesses, and that's when Adam Schiff got up and said, oh, well, how about we just spitballing here? How about we go for 1 week? 1 week, and then that's it. That's all we need is 1 week. Why can't you just give us 1 week? See, why can't you just give us a little? Come on, honey. Why can't you just let me feel your boob? Just, I mean, over your shirt, over the bra, no big deal. Maybe under the shirt, over the bra. Once you start seeding the concept, there really is no pulling up from it. There's one thing. Democrats are really good at manipulation. Really good at manipulation. And that's exactly what this is an attempt to do. Just let us have a couple of days. That's all we need. And then when we come back, we'll say this isn't enough time. Remember the Kavanaugh hearing? We need a week delay so that the FBI can conclude their investigation, look into these Christine Blasey Ford allegations, and then we can put this to bed once and for all. You wouldn't want to put Kavanaugh on the court with this cloud hanging over him. So the Republicans said, okay, you can have 1 week. And what happened? At the end of 1 week, Democrats said, this investigation was rushed. We need to slow this process down. We need to have a thorough investigation, not this 1 week rushed business that Republicans rammed down our throat, when in fact they were ramming it down their own throats. They were the ones who conceived the concept. They were the ones who insisted on the concept. They were the ones who conned ditzy Jeff Flake into going along with the concept, and they got it. It was all they were asking for is 1 week. And then they get their week and they said, this is not enough time. Why are you rushing this? What are you trying to hide? They never, ever say what they want. They are the party of patience, remember. Their ultimate goal is to take over the entirety of the healthcare system, for example. They have been going at it very slowly over time through proposing expanding Medicare to actually expanding Medicaid. Medicaid is supposed to be for poor. Now you can be a family of four making $80,000 a year and get this so-called benefit for the poor. They want to lower the age of Medicare eligibility. Well, why can't we allow people 55 years old and older to buy into the system? It should be open to them as well. They want to close that gap and squeeze private insurance out of existence. That's their goal. If they can't get it in one fell swoop, they're going to take it one brick at a time, or in Johnny Cash parlance, one piece at a time. And it won't cost them a dime. Same thing here. Just give us a week. That's all we want. Seems perfectly reasonable. Most requests from people seem perfectly reasonable, especially from sociopaths. They have quite a way with words and a way of making things seem normal. But they're lying. They're lying. They're going to stab you in the back first chance they get, and they already will have chambered a ready-made excuse as to why 1 week wasn't enough time. And what are you trying to hide by not giving us another week? We're just asking for 1 week. You can't give them an inch, or you'll find out that you've lost a mile or more. So after Adam Schiff's proposal about limited witnesses and limited time, and we just need this, and we concede all our power to the Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice, he can rule on all of this. Jay Sekulow gets up there. See, in addition to wanting to call their own witnesses, Democrats don't want the White House to be able to call any witnesses, except for the witnesses that the Democrats want. It's kind of funny because in no trial, Democrats run around saying, there are no trials anywhere without witnesses. This is an outrage. This is a phony thing. This is sick and it's wrong and it should not be allowed to stand. Well, there are no trials anywhere where the only people allowed to call witnesses are the prosecution. That case would be thrown out of court faster than the ink could dry on the signature from the judge. There's no, in my defense, I'd like to call, nope, you can't call anybody. That's just, let's go right to the jury. What do you mean you can't call anybody? But while insisting that this must be treated as a trial, and therefore we must have witnesses or else it's a complete waste of time and a sham and a fraud, they're also saying the White House shouldn't be able to call the witnesses they want. That wouldn't fly. That isn't right. That isn't justice. If you care about justice, Democrats sure talk about justice. They don't actually know what the word means, I think. They're in the process of trying to redefine it to mean liberals getting what they want. So Jay Sekulow, president's lawyer, steps up and hammers Democrats on this very point.
But I just think the irony of this before we go to dinner, that we could call anyone we want except the witnesses we want, but we can call their witnesses that they want. Remember we said the fruit of the poisonous tree? It's still the fruit of the poisonous tree. It doesn't get better with age, as I said. But this idea that this is going to be a fair process, call the witnesses they want. Don't call the witnesses you want because they're irrelevant. Maybe irrelevant to them. They're not irrelevant to the president. And they're not irrelevant to our case.
A freaking men. The prosecution does not get to dictate what defense the defense puts on. The burden of proof still resides with the prosecution. Of course, if this were a court of law, this is only a court of law and only needs to be treated as a court of law when that suits Democrats. Then they stand up and say, well, it's just like any other trial and this is how trials are. And to do it any differently than any other trial would be an outrage. But when it's inconvenient for them, when it's something they do not like, why, they don't need to do that. This is ridiculous. This is beyond the pale. You can't put on whatever kind of defense you want. You can't try and introduce exculpatory evidence at trial. What are you trying to do here? This is a sham and it has to end. To illustrate how big of a joke this entire thing is, I want to play a question submitted by none other than Pocahontas herself, Hiawatha Elizabeth Warren. These questions are scripted still. It's day two. There's no real, genuine inquiry. I think of the almost 200 questions they went through, it was more than 150. Somewhere between 150 and 175 probably is what the number ended up being. None of these questions, with the exception of maybe two or three, were designed to elicit any information that the questioner didn't already have. That's how you know it's a sham trial. Would you agree with me, Senator? This question is for the House managers. Would you agree with me that Donald Trump is evil and needs to be removed from office? And then Adam Schiff will stand up and go, that's an excellent question, Senator. Yes, I would agree with you, because Donald Trump is perhaps history's greatest monster. Blah, 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 blah. Go back through the circle, jerk, and churn out nothing burger after nothing burger and lather, rinse, repeat. It's a damn joke. To illustrate that point, Elizabeth Warren, who's running for president, you would think this would be a time for Elizabeth Warren to shine. She would try to take advantage of this opportunity to show her prowess as a legislator, as a leader, that she would have nothing but seriousness and an earnest sense of urgency as she presents her questions to the Chief Justice. And you would think those questions would be probing, or at least at a bare minimum, they would be radical left-wing things. Something to try to appeal to somebody out there who might vote for her in Iowa on Monday. But she submitted what might end up being the most ridiculous question of the entire thing, which is saying a lot when you've got, you know, almost 175 questions, you got more than 150 questions, that you have the dumbest, most absurd question is, I suppose, an achievement. Maybe she deserves an embossed, frameable certificate of some sort for taking us down to a level. There's dumb, and then there's Elizabeth Warren question dumb. So congratulations, you've managed to create a new level of stupid. What did Elizabeth Warren ask? Well, the Chief Justice read it out, as he reads out all questions. So as you listen to this clip, try to figure out, there should be a prize if you can find one. Well, you won't find one, so the prize could be $1 trillion. See if you can find the point, what information she's trying to gather, and in any sense at all relevant to the proceedings at hand. Now, I realize that not all the questions, most of the questions were not trying to do that. Most of the participants who asked questions aren't running for president of the United States. And most of the other questions, well, none of the other questions were this damn stupid. So see if you can spot what in the hell Elizabeth Warren is hoping to gain by asking this question.
The question from Senator Warren is for the House managers. At a time when large majorities of Americans have lost faith in government, does the fact that the Chief Justice is presiding over an impeachment trial in which Republican senators have thus far refused to allow witnesses or evidence contribute to the loss of legitimacy of the Chief Justice, the Supreme Court, and the Constitution?
Did you hear a point? Did you hear anything in that question? Is the Republicans refusing to witness? Is that making John Roberts look like a fool? Is that ruining the Supreme Court and the Chief Justice and the entire Constitution? Yes, Elizabeth Warren is exceedingly concerned about the Constitution. You can tell, by the way, that when she tramples on it, she makes sure to wipe her shoes first. She makes sure she's not wearing golf cleats. Oh, she has golf cleats nearby just in case they're necessary. But do you really believe for a second that Elizabeth Warren is sitting there really concerned about the credibility of the Chief Justice and the Constitution? Do you think she's read the Constitution? I love this. Somehow, as if suddenly the American people are going to go, you know what? I did have respect for the Supreme Court and the Constitution and even Chief Justice Roberts. But having watched Republicans say no to witnesses, well, that's it. It's all out the window. To hell with it. I'm going to hunt down Chief Justice Roberts everywhere he's in public and spit in his face because I've lost all respect for him. What was she hoping to accomplish? I get it. She's running for president of the United States. Presumably, since nobody's mind in that chamber is going to be convinced by that dumbass question, she must assume that there's a constituency for that question somewhere on planet Earth, presumably in either Iowa or New Hampshire. Who that person is, I do not know. Maybe somebody who just woke up from a coma, has severe amnesia and massive brain trauma. Maybe they hear that and they go, hell, I was on the fence about who to vote for come Monday, but now that I've heard Elizabeth Warren ask that brilliant question, it's game over. I shall go caucus for Elizabeth Warren. Who are they appealing to? Who are these people? What color is the sky on their planet? I'm genuinely curious because it is not Earth, and the answer can't be blue. It has to be a planet that is lacking oxygen. It has just enough to keep you alive, but not enough to allow the brain to function at even a normal, let alone a high level. So this thing wrapped up last night. Tomorrow, today, they will be convening to decide the question. The first vote, they're going to vote, I believe, on a proposal by Chris Van Hollen to allow witnesses, some witnesses, only certain witnesses. Democrats are very concerned about a fair trial with only some witnesses, and to allow the Chief Justice to essentially become the godhead of the Senate. That will tell you everything you need to know. I think it's actually about the Chief Justice making rulings before there is any question of witnesses. If all of those attempts by Democrats to say, we just need a week, give us a week, if those fail, then they should move in fairly quick order. I'm sure that Democrats will find some kind of way to try to drag it out, but they will move to acquit or convict, or whatever. I don't want to never spike the football on the five-yard line. I don't know what the Senate is going to do. It's not really a tall order that Democrats have to come up with, as you'll hear in the discussion with Brian Darling. Democrats, there are gettable Republicans. Democrats didn't seem to have an effective or smart strategy for trying to appeal to them. Their goal was to try to appeal to the audience at home. They were playing to the camera, not to the chamber. The chamber is what they need convincing. If they'd have played to, you know, Collins and Romney and Murkowski exclusively or almost exclusively, I think they could have made some inroads there. They chose not to. They chose to be really partisan hacks, which was surprising to me. I was really shocked at how rude they were. They've insulted the chamber. They've insulted the Chief Justice. They've insulted the other, the White House lawyers. They've gone at them with petty personal insults and digs. I'm not sure who that endears them to, except for the Democratic Party's base, which is why we're here at all in the first place. Before we go to the interview, I just want to play this clip of Tom Cotton, since those of you who are concerned about the coronavirus are thinking, why aren't we shutting down travel? Why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we moving that? We could be moving in that direction. And if we do, and you support that, you owe Tom Cotton a beer, because he raised that issue yesterday morning before the impeachment issue started.
Now, look at China's own actions. They have quarantined 60 million people, 60 million, more than the entire population of our West Coast. They've shut down schools indefinitely. Classes canceled nationwide indefinitely. Hong Kong, a part of China, has basically shut down all travel from the mainland. That's why it is essential that we immediately stop all travel on commercial aircraft between China and the United States, making exceptions, of course, for American citizens to come back, as we just brought back yesterday, allowing essential trade to flow as long as crews on ships and aircraft are not allowed to go into the general population in America, and making exceptions, of course, for medical personnel to go into China to try to get a handle on this.
I think it's likely that we're going to see a China travel ban, at least a temporary one, pretty soon. Now that someone like Tom Cotton is raising this issue, now that the World Health Organization has declared a state of emergency, now that other countries have shut down travel with China, now that China's locked down 50 million people, I think it only makes sense. It's going to inconvenience a lot of people. It could do a little bit of damage to the economy, but in the long run, it's probably the smart move, so we at least get a handle on this situation, find out how this thing is transmitted, and find a test, maybe even not a vaccine. That'll probably take too long, but at least a way to test for it, since the gestation period appears to be up to 2 weeks. Anyway, let's get to the Brian Darling interview, shall we? And I hope you have a great weekend. I wrap up the show at the end of the interview, so there's no reason for me to come back at the end of it. You're going to enjoy this conversation. Brian has great insights, as always. And if you're the one lady in Scotland who's a Brian Darling fan, you're going to love this interview. Have a wonderful weekend. We will follow this all weekend and hopefully have some answers, plus the Iowa caucus on Monday. I'll see you then. All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 31st, the last day of January 2020. And I literally just had to look that up on my phone, and I have not been drinking much. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Welcome to the interview edition, the Friday interview edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast. And we bring in returning champion. He found out last week that Liz Harrington tied him.
Yes.
And he had to come back and break that tie. It's Brian Darling.
I bet she doesn't have any fans in Scotland.
No, you have one. Don't push
That's
it.
That's more than her.
Move south to Wales
more than her.
Or something. Maybe. Anyway, I wanted to have you in because I don't know if you know this or not, but there's an impeachment going on. There's something happening in the Senate.
Heard of that.
And very few people know more about how the Senate works, Senate procedure, and knows more senators than Brian. Brian, first of all, your impressions of this thing. Today, we should get the vote on what comes next.
Yeah.
So, first of all, before we get to that, one of the things that has been floated around in liberal cable news and amongst Democratic senators, conveniently, weirdly, they're all on the same page, is the idea of ceding control of the United States Senate to the Chief Justice who's presiding over.
Right.
So he's just presiding. He doesn't actually have any power.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate controls the Senate. The Senate loves controlling the Senate. All senators love being senators. There's reverence for the rules and everything. And that Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, our senator,
yes,
one of them, is proposing the idea of empowering the Chief Justice to pretty much rule over it, turning the Supreme Court or the Senate into a courtroom, a literal courtroom, where the Chief Justice gets to choose what witnesses are germane, what is relevant, what evidence should be admitted, whether or not executive privilege applies, things like that. As a lawyer and as somebody who knows Supreme Court history or Senate history and Senate procedure, talk about how absurd the concept of this is. It's just a PR stunt.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible to do because the Senate can vote to empower the Chief Justice to make rulings, but the Senate has to give that power away
to the
Chief
Justice. And
they
would never do that.
No, they're never going to do it. The only way they would do it is if Republicans, if some Republicans didn't want to get blamed for certain rulings or for subpoenas being issued for certain witnesses, and they wanted to kind of clean their hands and say, oh, let's let the Chief Justice do it. And then then somebody would make the request that Chief Justice is doing it, and they'd say, oh, well, we really didn't vote for that. But ultimately, it's not going to happen.
Senate controls the Senate,
yes,
and the Senate loves controlling. They would never cede power to the House. They would never acquiesce to the House's rules.
It's true.
And essentially, that's what this would be doing, is ceding power to an external body.
Temporarily, though, it's still
temporarily, but even still.
No, I hear you. I think it's absurd to think that the Senate would ever vote to say empower the a justice who's shown no inclination to use these types of powers anyways. I mean, he's been very quiet. The only action he's taken that is of note is that he wouldn't read one question from
your
former
boss,
Senator Rand Paul, because it mentioned the whistleblower's name. So, yeah, other than that, he's been kind of a potted plant up there. And that's what the Chief Justice is supposed to do. He's just supposed to sit there and kind of be like a referee in a hockey game where he doesn't do much other than
he's
just
more
keep,
of a timekeeper.
Yeah, timekeeper.
He looks
better.
Like he's doing a crossword puzzle and he's like, all right, I have to read this question. Here's the question next. Go ahead. I'm going to go to sleep for 2.5 minutes. As watching this over the last, they had 16 hours of questions. Were you at all surprised by anything you saw in the questions? I thought that the Democrats were much more scripted and rehearsed than I expected them to be. I expected them to be, but I didn't think, I mean, you got Adam Schiff walking up there with a 3-ring binder that he's reading the direct answer to a question that he supposedly didn't know the question existed until about 20 seconds earlier. They have PowerPoints and videos ready to go. It seems incredibly choreographed.
Yeah, I think that's what surprised me, how choreographed it is. I thought there might actually be a real question at some point asked, but all it seems they're doing is each side is just giving their side the opportunity to just continue to argue their case. It's nothing more than that. There have been a couple semi-interesting questions, but for the most part, they're just using the Q&A to continue the debate.
Are you surprised by how would you evaluate the strategy of the Democrats to take 22 hours for what amounted to about 5 to 6 hours worth of arguments, but keep churning through it and churning through it?
knowing senators, knowing that their natural state is not sitting still and silently on the floor of the Senate or anywhere on earth, would you have advised a strategy of hammering home that message?
I guess if I was a Democrat, but that would never happen. I guess the funny thing is my former boss, Senator Rand Paul, made the case that I agreed with, that this is kind of, it could be considered an abuse of power by the House Democrats. The fact that they keep repeating themselves, they're not speaking to senators, they're speaking to the American people. And what they're supposed to be doing is making the case to senators. They should have just made their case and stopped repeating the same points over and over again, which they're clearly doing for the American audience to try and beat up on Trump going into 2020. The 2020 elections.
But realistically, they needed four senators. We don't know if they'll get them. By the time you hear this, there may have been a vote, but we don't know as of this taping. They needed four Republicans. They may have three. It seems like Cory Gardner out of Colorado has said, I don't see the need for witnesses. So that makes their haul that much more difficult. But strategically, by playing to the audience, by playing to the cameras, and some of the managers, the cameras in the Senate are 15 feet off the ground. So when you see somebody looking directly into the camera, they're not looking, you know, from you to you. I go to the camera to your eyes. It is this to normal people. So it's painfully evident to everybody in the Senate that they're playing to the cameras and not to the crowd.
Right. They're not supposed to be doing that.
They could have theoretically gotten witnesses. Whether they will or not, we don't know yet. But they would have had a better chance, don't you think, if they had done we are talking to these six specific senators. Everybody else is sort of irrelevant, and we're going to try and play to you. And they didn't.
No, they didn't at all. They never actually made a credible case. They weren't trying to persuade anybody. Maybe they weren't able to persuade anybody. I mean, we pretty much knew what the final vote was going to be before this process started.
The ultimate outcome, you're not going to get to 67 votes, but Democrats were playing the long con.
Yeah.
They wanted to play this out. They want to embarrass the president. They want Bolton. They want Mick Mulvaney. They want the witnesses they have, and they want to deny the White House the witnesses they want. And they just seem to have bungled it.
Yeah. And from one other thing you said, the fact that they're looking at the cameras indicates that they're not speaking to the Chief Justice. They're supposed to be addressing the Chief Justice when they are doing this discussion, and they're not doing so. They're clearly, obviously, the audience is the Senate, but their audience for them is not the Senate. They don't care about the Senate at all. All they care about is the American people and making the case to the American people. I don't know. I thought that they made a pretty decent case. I mean, they mapped put their case out there, and Adam Schiff did a decent job doing what he wanted to do. But ultimately, they didn't convince anybody. We knew they weren't going to convince anybody. There's no new evidence. We already know what John Bolton wrote in his book. It's been reported in the New York Times. It's not a secret, and it hasn't moved anybody. So if he comes and testifies, nothing's going to change. So I don't think Republicans will allow witnesses. And I think one of the main reasons why Republicans are resisting witnesses is because of guys like Cory Gardner, who's in cycle in Colorado. He's one of the individuals who could actually convince a conference to go along with it. If he said, look, I'm not going to win my reelection if we don't get this witness, and I don't look reasonable, and I don't know how I'm going to come out, but I probably will vote to acquit the president, that would convince senators to say, we need to save our guys that are in cycle. We need to save Susan Collins in Maine. But the senators that are in trouble, who are having a hard time getting reelected, they're the ones that the most don't want to have witnesses, because it draws out the process and it's not going to bring any new evidence in front of the Senate.
Do you think that will work? Do you think that people care about this?
I don't. I've stopped caring a long time ago. I mean, and I live inside the Beltway. And, you know, I think that the American people care a lot about pocketbook issues. I think they're probably bored out of their minds, because we hear it over and over. We're stuck watching this stuff and listening to this stuff, and we're bored because they're repeating themselves over and over again, the same things. The ratings are showing that the American people, they really aren't following this. They want alternatives. They want to watch things other than impeachment. And it's not moving people. It doesn't have this massive impact in the electorate where all of a sudden Trump voters are abandoning Trump because he got impeached by House Democrats and the Senate's going to acquit him.
It's a different feel. You wouldn't know by talking to real human beings out there non-political types. You wouldn't know that there's an impeachment going on. In a way, that's the most bizarre thing about all of this is how normal it feels.
Well, yeah, I think it's because of the age we live in. You think about during the Nixon impeachment and how that basically when Nixon was under investigation, you had three networks. That was it. If you turned the TV on, you were stuck watching one of the three networks. If you wanted to get your news, you had to go out and get, if you lived in Washington, it was the Washington Post. You lived in Boston, Boston Globe. If New York, New York Times. I mean, you had a very limited way to get your news. You don't have that anymore. And so you have a lot more opportunities to get more information and the information you want. You don't have to watch the impeachment. You can watch other stuff. You can enjoy your life.
When listening and assessing the, well, you got the House managers. You already said you thought they made a decent case,
yeah.
Even though you don't agree with it,
right?
What they had to offer. What about the White House representatives? It was kind of a dream team.
Yeah,
you know, lawyers you've heard of, very impressive resumes. And, you know, the Democrats were no slouches either.
Right.
On paper, their resumes were impressive, but the other team, the defense,
did a great job. I mean, you know, Alan Dershowitz is getting a lot of heat for making some arguments, but and some of the one of the arguments is basically that the Article II powers of the president are vast, but it's true. I mean, what he's saying may not be something people want to hear, but he's making credible arguments and talking about mixed motives. What if the president had a bad motive and a good motive?
They obsessed on Wednesday night. Was Alan Dershowitz says that the president can do anything because if he believes his re-election is in the national interest. That's not what Alan Dershowitz said. Alan Dershowitz said if something, the president believes something is in the national interest that also benefits him and politically, you can't impeach him for doing something that benefits him.
Like tax cuts.
Right, because it has a dual purpose.
Right.
And no politician on earth is going to go, I'm going to vote for this because I think it's really going to screw me over and ruin my chances at re-election.
Right.
Or simultaneously, I'm going to do this even though it screws over the country. There's always a mix.
Right. I mean, if you get some left-wing nut who becomes president and they start pushing a Medicare for All, they're doing it obviously to please their constituents that got them there, right? I mean, if we get Elizabeth Warren as president, she's going to be pushing crazy left-wing policies, which she thinks is going to get her reelected. It's in her interest to do it. And in her mind, she thinks it's good politics. I mean, every politician that's in office is trying to do things to get themselves reelected and to help America.
The argument against Dershowitz seems to be they want to bifurcate. They want to remove the part where they believe it's the right thing to do and just focus on the other half that it is benefits me politically as well, the side effects.
Right.
You can't do that.
No.
That was Dershowitz's argument.
Yeah.
And it is
a good argument.
It's being deliberately bastardized by the left, saying the president has carte blanche now thanks to Alan Dershowitz.
It's insane. I mean, he's getting beaten up. Look, he did represent some really bad people. I mean, you represented O.J. Simpson, Klaus von Bülow, all these guys.
Jeffrey Epstein, recognize you went to law school.
Right.
Everybody deserves a defense.
What do you do?
Everybody goes, I'm not representing this person.
Right. But the thing I find objectionable is all of a sudden you're hearing the talking heads bringing that up now. They're bringing it up saying, oh, when they had him on as a talking head to talk about random political issues over the past 5 or 6 years, they didn't bring it up.
He was their guy until
he wasn't.
Until this. And then it's like he's the redheaded stepchild,
and
they pretend they didn't ever know him. And you see people like Lawrence Tribe is always sort of the curly to Dershowitz's Mo.
Yeah.
Suddenly the wig gets ripped off of Dershowitz because he's now defending the president, and suddenly Tribe is the new Mo. It's kind of funny to watch, and it's sad, but it really does shine a bright spotlight on how situational principles have become in Washington, D.C.
You're making me want to watch a Three Stooges marathon rather than watch any more of this impeachment.
Yeah, I'd rather
it'd be so much more entertaining.
I'd rather be poked in the eyes than watch any more of it. But, you know, this phenomenon, there were always liberals – who were principled liberals.
Mm-hmm.
And it came to matters of civil liberties. It didn't matter if it was bucking their party. Something
right.
like the FISA abuses would have outraged
sure.
them. And they would have stood against the Obama administration and condemned it even after the fact. Now they deny that there was any FISA abuse, even though the FISA court itself has said, we were lied to. Two of these warrants are invalid, and we're reviewing the other two. Is there a moment that changed, do you think? And is there a way to get back to the point where even, you know, Justice Scalia, hardcore originalist, very revered on the right, big fan of the Constitution, but he ruled against his interest many, many times. We're not seeing that much anymore.
No, we don't see it at all. We see, I mean, on both sides, we see just partisanship. We don't see... It drives me nuts when I see the debate over the filibuster, because it seems like they swap talking points when the different parties take over. You know, you're against the filibuster when you're in power, and then when you lose power, they almost have a summit and just hand off the talking points, and because they change. And it's, you know, we're seeing, I think, a little bit of that now. I think, you know, a little ultimately, my opinion of this whole impeachment is that, you know, I'm not comfortable with what President Trump did, but I don't think he should be removed from office for it. I don't think it was great. I don't think, he, you know, if somebody wanted to censure him, slap him on the wrist, I'm okay with that. But the idea that he should be removed from office from this is obviously over-the-top partisanship. And you're seeing these both sides just engage in some arguments that just don't make much sense. Because we, again, we know the outcome. We know how this is all going to play out. And it seems like there isn't an honest man or woman in Washington anymore. There really isn't. Like these guys, they get into their bunkers, their partisan bunkers. And on almost every issue, you don't see really honest debates. They don't, because neither side wants to give an inch.
I will give Republicans credit and Democrats criticism. For one thing, you referenced how they've switched talking points on things like, as Professor Dershowitz pointed out on Wednesday night, Lawrence Tribe back in the Clinton administration during the Clinton impeachment said, you can't indict a sitting president. You can't charge a sitting president. It's absolute. It's clear. It's obvious. Mm-hmm. And now he's switched. It seems in a lot of cases, the Democrats won those arguments back in 1999. Now they're trying to lose them retroactively.
Right.
It's a much tougher thing. Republicans are in a much better strategic position from an arguing standpoint because they can say, when they pointed out, you said the exact opposite back 20
right.
years ago. I said, well, yeah, but you won.
Right.
You won the argument.
I mean, these are hard debates to have. They're hard. I mean, it's really a difficult debate. But ultimately, if the president has a power to pardon, if the president has a power to commute sentences, how can the federal government prosecute a president? The reason why we have impeachment in the Constitution is because that is a remedy. So I think Alan Dershowitz was right when he said that. I think that conservatives who say that there is a lot of power in the Article II powers of the president and the president can't be indicted for a federal crime, I think they're right because he could just pardon himself.
Right. Well, you can remove him and then you can go
exactly.
after him all you want.
Yep.
And it's that simple. There's another sort of... subtext drama happening on the floor of the Senate as the impeachment trial sort of hopefully wraps up. And that is that there are four, technically, but really three members out there because nobody thinks Bennett stands a chance. I don't know why he's even bothering at this
point.
He's
still running?
Technically, yes. You got Klobuchar, you got Warren, and you got Sanders running for, and early next week, we've
yeah.
got the Iowa caucuses.
Right.
Warren is on the descent.
According
yes. to all polls, Bernie is on the ascent.
Oh, yeah.
And Biden just kind of floats in the ether. But realistically, there's a possibility that Amy Klobuchar could finish ahead of Elizabeth Warren in Iowa if the current trends
mm-hmm.
manifest themselves.
Right.
Is Elizabeth Warren's goose cooked?
No, because she has to wait for New Hampshire. She has to wait it out and see how she does in New Hampshire, no matter what happens in Iowa, because that's her last stand. I mean, she's from the state next door, as is Bernie Sanders, and she's got to just throw chips in and hope that she does well in New Hampshire. I mean, she has put a lot of resources into Iowa. So if she does not do well, it's not going to look good for her. But it would be a big mistake for her to pull out. But we're going to see either Buttigieg or Klobuchar have to drop out after Iowa, or both, if they both do
you
bad.
You think so?
They have to. That's their state. That is where they have made their stand, and they have to do reasonably well, or one or both of them have
to
get
Mayor
out.
Well, Mayor Pete can do well he can podium or finish just off the podium in fourth and still survive to New Hampshire, I think, just because once you get to South Carolina, the demographics kill him. You get 30% voting black vote in the Democratic primary in South Carolina. There's no way Pete survives that without he needs some momentum to carry him through because he's just not going to do well in South Carolina. Klobuchar has never been a top tier candidate. She's not riding a wave. She's standing on the shore. Yeah. So it's a different story. But who do you see being there are two distinctly different choices in the front runners between Biden and Sanders.
Right.
Can we learn anything about the Democratic Party by one a victory for either of them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Iowa right now, if you look at the polls, there's no doubt that Bernie Sanders is going to do well.
Is he
going to win? We don't know. But if Biden wins Iowa and then rolls into New Hampshire after winning Iowa and wins in New Hampshire, it's game over. I mean, you'll still have, obviously, Bernie
playing. Bernie will stay until the bitter end.
And probably Bloomberg, too, because he's got so much money. And it doesn't appear that he cares if he wins anything. He just wants to beat up on Trump and use his running for president as a platform to do so.
He can do that without running for Trump. And he's actually more liberated as a super PAC than as a candidate.
True, but nobody would really pay attention to him. That's the problem. I mean, he can actually get a lot of free media from running ads against Trump while he's running for president because the media will treat him like a make-believe, actual, credible candidate, even though we know he's got no shot.
You really think he has no shot?
No.
He's put all of his marbles in the Super Tuesday bag, which is an interesting. He's counting on one person winning Iowa, somebody else winning New Hampshire, somebody else winning South Carolina. And it brings this no momentum. There's no momentum behind anybody to the point in states where he's spent a fortune.
Right. Isn't every 4 years, don't we have one candidate who has a firewall state? That's not New Hampshire, not Iowa, not
South Carolina. Well, President
Rudy
Giuliani.
It doesn't usually work.
Effectively.
The Super Tuesday strategy never works. It just never works. Even maybe it'll work because he's just ridiculously wealthy, and maybe we've never seen a candidate like this, but I can't imagine that he's going to move the dial after getting destroyed in Iowa, which he's barely playing in. And, you know, he's running ads, but he's doing that for a national purpose. But he's going to lose badly in Iowa, lose badly in New Hampshire. He's not even going to register in South Carolina. And then from there, like, how does he walk into Super Tuesday saying, oh, all of a sudden, you know, you guys need to vote for me because I have a chance? It's not going to work. I mean, you get massive amounts of momentum. Even though Iowa's kind of a funny state, you don't have all that many nominees that win Iowa. They don't always win Iowa. Barack Obama did. But you look at Iowa's kind of a funny state, especially for Republicans. But you win Iowa, and then you go into New Hampshire, and you do reasonably well, you've got a chance. But if you do badly in Iowa and then do badly in New Hampshire, you're done. You're cooked.
Do you think Elizabeth Warren survives the next 2 weeks?
I think she, if she does really bad in Iowa, she's going to just drop out. But if she does well enough to survive.
She has to stay.
Yeah, I would think she has. She'll probably do okay. And then she'll survive to New Hampshire.
Her dropping out helps Bernie Sanders against Biden.
Yeah.
That could breathe even if Bernie finishes second in both the first two states. If Warren drops out, that could breathe new life into him.
You would think, although there's some bad blood. Well, I wonder if the bad blood, because you, as you know, you work for, you know, a candidate and your boss hates another candidate.
That, and they accuse him of being sexist.
Yeah, that doesn't
and
help.
A horrible person and this, that, and the other thing. Is there a way, do you think that somebody wins the Democratic nomination or everybody else loses it? Because it doesn't seem like
nobody's
normally
winning it.
They coalesce around
somebody. Nobody's winning it. It's not, you know, Barack Obama is a classic case of somebody who just willed himself to victory. You know, he won Iowa, lost New Hampshire, and then it was just a battle. I mean, that went on for a long, long time. But you look at this one, nobody really stands out. Like, the Democrats have a pretty bad crop of candidates.
They do. And it reminds me after the Bush years, 2008, and you look back and you realize the destruction, not deliberate, but the destruction in the wake of the party because of President Bush wanting to be above it all, not wanting to be seen as being political, And there was no bench. There was no line. There was no heir apparent. He had a vice president who wasn't interested in the job.
Yeah.
So that takes away one of the biggest fish that you can have in any pond. BP is obviously that. Democrats sort of had the same situation last time. But the Democrat future, if they nominate somebody like a Joe Biden, who this week announced that he's going to pick somebody for vice president, and it's going to matter because he's an old guy and he could drop dead at any moment, which, again, doesn't really sound too cool on a bumper sticker.
Doesn't help your campaign.
When you'd have the difference in voting support. Over 65 loves Joe Biden. Under 25 loves Bernie Sanders.
Right.
Where is – what is the Democratic Party nowadays?
Well, it's a mess. And, you know, if Joe Biden does win the nomination and wins Iowa, say he wins Iowa, and then he squeaks out a victory in New Hampshire, goes in South Carolina, wins, on paper that looks great, but he's not going to have won it. The other candidates will have lost it because he's done a horrible job of running a campaign. He looks really old and really confused. Like he's not all there.
Right.
He's not all there. I mean, you know, Donald Trump's an old guy, but nobody would – argue that he can't get up in front of a crowd and woe them for an hour. He stands there for an hour. He's all fired up, full of energy. I don't see Joe Biden. First of all, he can't get a crowd like Donald Trump.
No.
But also, I don't think he could stand there for an hour and not say something really stupid.
Who do you see as having an easier or at least better chance of uniting the Democratic Party? Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, or Joe Biden?
I think if Elizabeth Warren were to win, she would have – I mean, she's – obviously really left-wing, but she's very smart. She has a ton of proposals out there. She's put a lot of meat in the bones of what she stands for. You know, I joke around that she's a little bit like Hillary Clinton, but not as likable. But that being said, I think she's not a weak candidate. I don't know how she would do in a debate standing up to Donald Trump, but she's really, you know, of all the candidates, they're all pretty bad, but she's the least bad of the bunch.
I tell you one thing that surprised me about Bernie, and I didn't – it applies to 2016 as well, but I didn't realize it until this time. The last debate when he and Elizabeth Warren had that sort of mix-up, if
yeah.
we can't even really call it a fight, over her accusing him of saying, ain't no way no broad ever is going to get elected president. Suddenly in private, he becomes Frank Sinatra. Like, look, broad's place is in the kitchen. I don't want to hear it. But what I found interesting in watching that exchange – is Bernie's unwillingness to go on the offensive, to defend himself, even on the offensive. He, in 2016, it reminded me of when the Clinton campaign was attacking Bernie Sanders. They had no qualms about being critical of Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders has a chance. The moderators at the debate set the ball on the tee and say, Senator, Hillary Clinton's emails, violations, blah, 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 blah. And his answer was, I'm so sick and tired of talking about your damn emails.
Right.
And he didn't want to talk about
right.
it. He has had opportunities to be critical of other candidates who have been critical of him,
right.
including Elizabeth Warren this time. When asked about that, he said, well, I don't want it. It's ridiculous and this didn't happen, but whatever. And then when the reporter goes right to Elizabeth Warren and said, what did you think when Bernie Sanders told you that broads ain't never going to be president? Instead of standing up and saying, wait a second, I just told you I didn't say that. You can't
right.
ask it that way.
Right.
He just kind of goes, shucks.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
When confronted, Bernie turtles
yeah.
in a lot of ways.
Agreed.
And I don't know that ultimately the Democratic Party realizes this yet. The excitement.
I mean, they like his policies and the fact that he's been around for a long time. And, you know, when you look at the Democratic Party, it really is a socialist party at its core.
Yes.
I mean, the policies for many are socialism light. I guess Nancy Pelosi and the more moderate, I guess. I mean, she's liberal, but she's more moderate than the Bernie Sanders AOC wing. They're, you know, socialism extra light, I guess, but they're all socialism. They're all swimming in the same pool, and he's a real deal. So people say, we love that guy, but then he's really bad as a politician. He has a really hard time debating. He gets so wonky and in the weeds on his policies, but when he's just not a guy I can see getting up debating Donald Trump and actually beating him, because I don't think he has it in him. I don't think he has a fight in his belly.
He doesn't seem to have a counterpunch.
No.
At all.
No.
He's like, well, I don't want to get into the personal thing. I don't want to discuss that. I don't want to go down in the mud.
Trump will.
Yes, he will. As you should.
Yeah.
When somebody's lying about
yes.
you, you should be pissed off. And if you're not pissed off that somebody's lying about you, it makes the passive viewer who doesn't know the truth think they're not lying about you. They're telling the truth and you can't defend
it. If somebody calls you a really bad name and you don't get outraged about it and angry, then maybe you did do something wrong. You know, if you're not mad, like look at Donald Trump. He's pissed. He's angry. He is beside himself about this impeachment, and rightfully so. And it's if he was just kind of like, yeah, you know, I don't think I did it. You know, Senate can do what they want. Have a trial. Have witnesses. It's okay. People would think he's guilty, but he's mad. Like he's pushing back hard. He's tweeting like crazy. I mean, he is a fighter. If nothing else, I think Republicans have learned a great lesson from Donald Trump is that if you're a politician, it helps if you actually dig in and fight and you're not afraid to fight back and punch back. I mean, he's the greatest counterpuncher maybe in American history in politics, but at a minimum in our lifetime.
Last question for you, Brian. And watching the media and preparing for all this as a media question, since you now work in media, can they make a difference? Do they still have the power to, you know, they say it'll only take 1 or 2 percentage points, one way or the other, to swing an election. Are they still that powerful?
Yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, look at the election. I mean, the last election, Donald Trump didn't win by that many votes. You add them up in all the swing states, and he's running a base campaign. He's running a campaign where he's either going to win by a handful of votes in a couple states, or he's going to lose by a handful of votes in a couple states. We know that the election is going to be close because it's just the nature of his politics, the fact that he is 95% of Republicans for him and 95% of Democrats against him, and it's a big fight for the middle. He's not running a traditional campaign in any sense. So the poll numbers that say he's not doing well in certain states, I don't believe those numbers. I don't believe them at all because it doesn't pull passion. But for impeachment, you know, I just don't think it has legs, but it could move a few voters, just enough voters. It may have an impact on the election, but we won't know. And I think the way that the American people are reacting right now, it's going to have a minimal effect. It's not going to have the effect that Democrats thought when they got into this fight.
It doesn't seem like anybody thought any of this through. It really doesn't. And they pushed their chips into the center of the table after they got their two cards. And they're just sitting there watching the rest play out going, there's nothing I'm in.
Pair of twos, I can do it. It's a pair. Maybe I'll pull another two.
People have won on less. Brian Darling, Liberty Government Affairs, and this show. Now you're now the champion again, I'm going to dub you the unofficial correspondent, the congressional correspondent of the Daily
That's
Caller
great.
Podcast.
I hope I get a mug or something out of it.
It comes with no benefits whatsoever, and in fact, you have to pay a $15 membership fee. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks for watching, telling a friend, spreading the word, all of that. Hopefully this whole thing will be over today or tomorrow, and we can get back to real life, or at least the Iowa caucuses next week. Whatever happens, we'll be here for it. Thanks for watching. Have a great weekend.